Welcome to this Stockbox interview with Andrew Bell from Red Rock Resources. Welcome, Andrew.
Hi.
Now, Andrew, you're back talking to us in a short space of time, but not without good reason, as yesterday Red Rock announced it had applied for additional ground licenses in the Victoria Goldfield in Australia. Now, there's lots of interest in this area currently, Andrew. Do you feel this is a golden opportunity for Red Rock?
Yes, I think the Victorian Goldfield, of course, is phenomenally rich, but had been neglected for about a century. I think for decades, it hasn't been looked at because the Victoria government was a little bit concerned with environmental matters and made life a little bit more difficult for miners than it was felt Western Australia did, for example. And other people weren't there. And I didn't go and look for the deeper gold underneath the existing mines. They were content to assume that what had happened in the 19th century from 1851 to, say, 1917, 1920, was that all the alluvial gold had been scooped up and the near-surface gold underneath it had been taken as well, and that was it.
Okay, so there was a perception that there was the gold had all gone, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
Yes, and it's obviously wrong, and people have gone back in there. But I think first thing was in 2005, the Fosterville mine started production, gradually built up steam. By 2011, it had produced 500,000 ounces. By 2016, it produced another 500,000. And since then, it's just exploded since Kirkland Lake took over and produced nearly 200,000 ounces in the first quarter of this year at a phenomenal grade of well over an ounce a ton. And so that's attracted people's attention. The Victoria State Government published a series of 20 papers from 2006 on to encourage people to take an interest in the, say, one third of the state in the north, where there isn't outcrop, where there's cover over the rock. And that cover is what we call the Murray River Basin or the Murray Basin. And it's got agriculture there. And so between 10 and 120 or 200 meters of soil and cover is over the rock that could have the gold in it. And they were saying, look, you extend these fault lines or shears that control the mineralization and run through the great mining centers like Ballarat, Bendigo, and run past Fosterville. Mm-hmm. And you extend them north, and there's a chance for more than 32 million, they estimated, with a probability of 50, of ounces waiting to be discovered there. And they produced this gravity survey data up there. And so some companies went, and one company got, say, 5,000 square kilometers, another got about 1,500 square kilometers. And then one or two majors came along and started taking an interest. And in the spring of this year, they started a tender process for four blocks of government land to attract people in. And that's all around Fosterville. And they were meant to be announcing the results now, but because of this COVID virus, they've delayed it. But that is taking place now. So all of this has raised interest gradually to a kind of fever pitch. And Fosterville South, trading off the name, the proximity to Fosterville, listed on the TSX in the middle of April. Price was up 50% within two or three weeks. And having raised $6 million at IPO, they decided to have a fundraising for $10 million, oversubscribed, so they're getting 15. So the ground is being snapped up really fast. And we realize that we've been looking for gold opportunities for some time, but Victoria's obvious under our noses. And this was going to be the last chance to get good acreage while it was still available. So we did it. And I think even now, you couldn't get a position like ours, because we got the last good ground, really, that was left in the traditional mining centres.
Okay. And why have you chosen these licences specifically? What did you like about them?
Well, what I liked is I think the paradigm, as I say, for a long time, was one based on, okay, you see where people got alluvial gold or gold from the shallow pits, and you look at the old workings, none of them were really more than 30 meters down. So you looked at what people were getting near surface like that in the past and used that as your starting point. And then in the north, undercover, that can't be your starting point. So the big companies that are up there are starting off with the gravity and with the structural interpretation. And they go then drilling down through the cover. And one of them, Catalyst, has already had two major, potentially major, but very good looking discoveries along the same trend that goes through Bendigo. So that's a completely different paradigm. But the same reasoning that applies up there, which is actually you go down, you find more gold, also was evidenced at Fosterville, because Fosterville, the grades of 41 grams a ton it's now reaching, are between 1,200 and 1,400 meters. Now, it is true that they started with near surface workings, the company there, that was, and gradually mined down and drifted down and got lower. And going lower, they then explored further and knew where to explore. If you were starting at surface, drilling down 1,200 meters and hoping to hit gold, it might be more difficult to find yourself in the right spot. But using modern exploration tools, that's exactly what Catalyst has done up in the north, and they've got a good starting point. So then one's reasoning is, well, heck, in the old mining centers of Bendigo and Ballarat, why don't we apply the same logic? Why don't we think of it structurally in terms of gravity, rather than just basing our thinking all on what happened in the first 20 or 30 meters? Because you take Fosterville, if you take the top 30 meters above the Fosterville mine, all you'd find is a little bit of fairly low-grade gold with little pockets in it of richer gold. You wouldn't get anything that would give you an indication of the riches below. So we're saying, look, underneath the whole area, you've got 35 kilometers depth of fertile sedimentary rocks. You've got widespread faulting, regional faults, local faults. You've got shearing. You've got a lot of folding and compression. All these events that took place. You don't know where the gold is going to have migrated. There are lots of targets there. And the whole area is prospective.
So an exciting opportunity and time for Red Rock, potentially.
Yes, well, obviously it is. I mean, if you went to most places in the world and you picked up licenses like these with so many mineral occurrences, so much evidence of gold mineralization and previous activity, and along known gold belts, then you'd be very, very excited. Because we're in Victoria, we look enviously at one or two of the other companies that have found things there, and we feel jealous rather than content with what we've got. But it seems to me that we can feel very content with what we've got, because I say there's a completely new paradigm of exploration, and this is still the early days. There are only two operating mines, Fosterville up there, producing, as I say, at the rate of perhaps this year 650,000 ounces, with an all-in sustaining cost of maybe $300 an ounce. And then next to us, the Ballarat mine, run by Lion Gold of Singapore, which was doing 40,000 ounces 2 years ago, hit a bit of bad ground last year, went down to 20,000 ounces, but hasn't had perhaps the capital or the exploration to really find out what's there, but not doing badly. So people's models of what's possible and what might be there are based on a very small number of cases. And everyone now wants to have the new Fosterville, hence Fosterville South listing in Canada. But actually, Fosterville isn't the only possible model of how that sort of epizonal gold isn't the only possible model of gold that's going to be in the area. They're going to be there's going to be disseminated gold, there's quartz gold. And once we've got two or three more discoveries and more activity, people are going to be following a lot more models. So this is very early days, but it's exciting time because the gold endowment of Victoria, the smallest Australian province state, smallest Australian state, but produced 32% of all Australia's historic gold, is yet to, and that's despite having had almost no activity from 1920 onwards. It's got a new lease of life.
Now, with the announcement from Red Rock last week on Australian gold and the announcement yesterday, it's quite clear that Red Rock are taking up a large footprint in the Victoria goldfield in Australia. I believe Red Rock used to have quite a big focus on Australian gold in times gone by. So is this shift of focus Red Rock returning to its roots? And are you eyeing up any more potential there?
Yeah, we started off in Australia, but more in gold, more in iron ore and manganese. We tried looking for and exploring for gold and other things, but we weren't necessarily successful at that stage. So our first gold project was actually, I think it was Kenya. And we then got a gold project in Colombia. Colombia we sold and are still getting royalties back from. And Kenya, well, you know, that's an exciting 1.2 million ounces that we had, that we proved up as a resource there. But it could be many million ounces. And we had a little bit of political issues, which really were our partner's political issues with the government. And I think we sorted all that out and we'll go forward from here. So, yeah, you know, it's exciting because we've got Kenya, which can be greatly expanded. And we have Victoria, where we can expect to. I mean, this isn't a question of, are we going to find gold? Of course we're going to find gold in our licenses. It's everywhere. It's a question of whether we can get the quantities and grades to make a really good project.
Okay. Well, Andrew Bell, thank you for talking to me.
Thank you.